What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 33 of the MMRcade podcast. Rob, how are you feeling this week? Thought I'd ask.
Still crap. Still crap. No, I think whatever I had has caused me to get like a sinus infection. So
that's brutal, man.
I don't know. It's the sickest I've been. You know what? In thinking about it, I was due to get sick. I've had a good run. So I think I'm just, getting it out of the way. Just paying my dues, if you would.
Yeah. I mean, talk about timing though. If there was any time to get sick, it would be when you don't have to fight, right? I know you got God sick really, on the day, but
yeah. Straight after a fight. So, God bless, right?
Yeah.
And let me tell you, you got to move already because it is eerie looking at your setup. Like you've just been robbed, dude. You've just been like house invaded.
I don't know if you could see it because it's like cut to a square in the video, but all my shelves are empty. We're literally moving in a week. So perfect time to mention that, by the way. Next week, we're not going to have a podcast, unfortunately, for those of you that watch us regularly. But hopefully the week after that, we'll be back. But yeah, man, it's kind of weird. I've been in this setup for so long and the next one's not going to look as pretty. It's not going to look as fancy, unfortunately.
If you want some tips, just holler. Because as you know, dude, my backdrop has made significant improvements. My backdrop game has just leveled, right?
It's like every new episode, you kept adding things and then you moved into the new room and now it's freaking awesome.
Yeah. I'm working it out. Like there's still, it's funny because you can only see this, but the rest of the room is still kind of boxes. I'm one of those dudes that like, I started putting together the office and then I plugged everything in and then I was exhausted. So I just started running cables everywhere. And then once you start that, it's like, I can't be bothered setting this up properly. So you just run a cable across the room. It's like, I can't be bothered ordering Starlink. So I ran a cable, like an internet cable across the house. And then, I can't bother. Like, it just keeps going. And now, like, I need to reorganize all the computers. But I'll wait until, I guess, my new rig. Check out the shirt. We're in affiliation t-shirt.
Oh, is Aftershock sending you a PC? That's sick.
We are working something out. They are developing me something special, so keep
going. Aftershock, I haven't got anything from them personally, but I used to work with them at Bethesda and knew what they did. They do awesome PCs, man. Like the coolest builds that you've ever seen.
You know what? In speaking with them though, I'm sure they'd be happy to be part of the team. They already are, essentially. So MMRcade and
Let's keep chatting with them. But this week, we've got a big episode when it comes to UFC 299. It's finally around the corner. A lot of people say that this card might actually be better than 300. I don't know how I feel about that, but we've got some cracking fights. As always, games news, what we're playing, reading, watching, and viewer questions at the end. So if you are new, please like, subscribe. If you have any viewer questions for us for future episodes, let us know in the comments below. But Rob, we're going to start off with UFC 299, our predictions for the card. First up is Sean O'Malley against Chito Marlon Vera. Very interesting fight. Probably a fight that never would have happened unless Sean O'Malley actually lost to Vera. So Sean, 17 wins, one loss. He obviously just won the title against Sterling via TKO, and he beat Jan beforehand. Vera, 23 wins, 8 losses. He's coming off a single win against Pedro Munhoz, but he lost to Sanhagen. But he does have wins against Font Cruz and Edgar. So he's got some pretty significant wins recently against some top names in that division. Mm. Rob, how do you feel about Sean O'Malley against Chito?
Mate, I am so uncertain. Because I do believe this is going to be a fight that is dictated by who turns up. Okay, like who turns up? I think, it is so hard to put a pin on. I will say though, as a betting man, if I had to favor someone, I'm going to favor Sean O'Malley. Definitely. Pretty much every one of his fights, I put him down as my pick because he has an uncanny way to find chins. He has an uncanny way to. He has impeccable timing for those and accuracy with those shots that have the power to switch people off. He is so hard to get a read on because his movement, his stance switching, and his spacing is near perfect. Okay. But as we saw in their first fight, if you're a dog and you make it a dog fight and you make it aggressive and violent, Vera's there for that.
Yeah.
Vera's very much there for that type of fight. And I guess that's where that leaves me on who's going to turn up. If Sean doesn't have as much success in finding the chin or doing the damage and earning the respect he needs to keep that space where he can kind of play in the range that he wants.
Yeah.
He's not going to have a lot of fun because Vera's, you can see it in Vera's eyes. You can see it in the way he fights. He's a dog, dude. He's going to get in there and he wants blood. He wants violence.
And I keep going back to their first fight, and we've talked about this on the podcast, how we don't want to take anything away from Vera's win because he still won, even given the circumstances of Sean O'Malley's leg injury. Do you know what the hell that was when he got kicked there? It like hit a nerve or like what was the actual injury? It's called a Lisfranc injury in his leg. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously what led to the eventual stoppage and the loss. But I just don't know what the chances of something like that happening again. The big thing for me is how many 5-round fights has Sean O'Malley had? I don't know. If going the distance, I'm slightly leaning more towards Vera, unless Sean O'Malley can just knock him out in the first, second, or whatever it might be. I need to look it up, how many 5-round fights Sean O'Malley actually has had.
I guess if you look at it, though, if you look at the fights where he's had to really test his mettle, let's say like against Peter Yan, how close was that fight?
Yeah.
Where Yan didn't go anywhere. Yan was there for the whole fight.
Yeah.
That was a close fight. And I feel like over 5 rounds, someone who like revels in that sort of fight, Vera's that guy. Vera's that guy. But I'll say though, we could be saying all of this and then Sean just,
just pop,
and it's over quick, early. Because he has that ability. You know, he has that ability. He's the odds for round one stoppage must be quite low because Sean is phenomenal at doing that.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. You know what was I thought was so impactful for me in their first fight was when Sean did go down, Vera jumped on him.
Yep.
The elbows.
Yeah.
The elbows Vera was landing on Sean, mate. Like in that little exchange, understandably, Sean was like his leg was gone.
Yeah.
But Vera was landing elbows, right? Like big elbows. You could hear the thunk of bone on bone. I don't know. I'm very interested in fight, and I do think it'll be dictated on who wins. I would favor Sean. He's my pick for this fight. But I can very much see Vera just being a dog, much like the Peter Yan fight. It becoming a much closer and harder fight than Sean is used to. And over 5 rounds, I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just like sick of me when it comes to my predictions. I tend to favor the guys that aren't necessarily knockout artists, and I don't know why I keep doing that. Like when it comes to Volk and Ilya, I wanted Volk to win and I was leaning towards Volk because I thought he could get it done. Ilya knocks him out, right? Even Sean against Aljamain, right? I love Aljamain, and I always lean towards him and I was always picking him for fights. And then he knocks him out, or it was the TKO specifically. I'm sick of making that call, so now I'm going to say Sean O'Malley for the win because I think it'll knock him
out. You know, I'll come to your defense with Volk. Yeah. He's Australian, dude. Like,
you got to back your own.
Nobody said on this podcast we weren't going to be biased. We're super biased. Like we pick our favorites a lot of the time, no matter
all
what.
All the time.
Is what it is, dude.
That's pretty true. But let us know what you think about Sean O'Malley against Chito in the comments. It is a really interesting fight, man. If I was the matchmaker, though, I think, you know, Sean should probably be fighting Marab now. I get the history between Sean and Chito, but that's probably the fight that's going to happen next anyways, depending upon who's the winner of this. But let's move on to the next fight. This is a banger, bro. Dustin Poirier against Benoit Saint-Denis. So Dustin, 29 wins, 8 losses. He was recently knocked out by Gaethje. We saw that last year. But he submitted Chandler before. He was submitted by Charles before that. And obviously, he had those 2 wins against Connor. Benoit Saint-Denis, he's on a bit of a tear at the moment. 13 wins, 1 loss. That knockout against Matt Frivola was freaking scary. But people are counting out Dustin, bro. And I don't know why people are counting out Dustin. He's not some like, oh, he's super old dude and he's washed up. He's freaking Dustin Poirier, right? And he fought Gaethje, one of the hardest, like probably the hardest hitter in that division. I don't understand why people, like I get Benoit is maybe one of the next up and comers and he could be a potential title contender, but this is still freaking Dustin Poirier that we're talking about. I don't know.
You know what I think it is? I think it's like a phenomenon, and I'll throw it back at the MMA community, because the guys at the top of the food chain, you know, the guys that in the top five, or the guys that have been fighting the top five for so long, who have won belts or lost belts or challenged for belts, I feel like the community is, once the hype train has reached its peak and they didn't get the result they wanted, they kind of jump off. They abandon ship. Mm-hmm. And then Dustin kind of like, he lost one, but then he won one, and then he lost one. And the MMA community is kind of always waiting for the fall off, because it happens a lot. Because these guys, like, the thing with MMA, especially in the competitive scene, is like, you keep fighting until you like better and better and better and better people, until you're either the best or you lose. Yeah. But you don't start back down at zero. It's not, you can't create a new character, dude, and fresh, like wipe your slate clean. Yeah, man, you're still up there.
Yeah,
even if you're having a rocky patch, even if you've lost yourself a little bit, you're still fighting 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and then like you're all these young, hungry dudes coming up and replacing the top 12, the top 10, you know, into the five. And it's like, it's a strange thing. And I think the community, it's like they see Dustin like as just a guy who's staying, his staying power at the top of that game is so long that they're waiting for him to slide. But, mate, he's not sliding. There's a lot of these guys. There's not many of them that don't slide. Like, we'd have to say him, Gaethje, people like Holloway, top of the game, aren't going anywhere, dude. No. And I feel like they're just waiting for him to slide off, but he's not doing it. You know, I understand the hype with Benoit, you know, jumping, you know, crushing his way up into that fight. I am worried, like, that head kick Dustin received last fight was mean, dude. Like, he's got a head on him, and that was a mean kick.
Yeah.
But if anyone's going to shake it off, I'm sure it'll be him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his stats now just to refresh my memory, but that KO loss to Gaethje, he hasn't lost by KO since 2016, right? So he's either won, or when he's lost, it's been like by submission. This is like Dustin Poirier still getting knocked out. However, we have said, and obviously we talked a lot about it when it comes to Volk, when was that fight? July of last year. He's had a bit of time to rest. He's not an old dude. I think he can bounce back from it, but Benoit has shown that he has real knockout power. Mm. But whether he has Gaethje knockout power is a different story, because Gaethje, several fighters have said, especially in that division, I think, who said it? It was a big name. But Gaethje is literally the hardest hitter in that division. Is Benoit as hard of a hitter? I don't know.
Who was it? Was it Khabib?
I think it was Khabib that said he was the hardest.
I watched the same thing where he said, like, Gaethje hits the hardest.
Like, and it doesn't look like he would, but he absolutely does.
And we'll also say, like, me and you were both surprised at Dustin's age. Like, dude's only a year older than me. But it feels like he's been in the UFC forever.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's because he's been at the top of his game for so long. And to say that, like, people might think, it's not that hard. But particularly in that division, right? Like, you look at how many killers are in the lightweight division. It's ridiculous. We literally have like Armin Sarukian and Oliveira fighting on the next card. And obviously Gaethje fighting Holloway. Holloway's not in that division. But dude, it was such a hard division for someone like Dustin to stay on top. But he's done it. And I reckon this is what I'm leaning towards, is Dustin winning and Benoit like not being able to break into that top five, like we've seen in other divisions in the past, right? I think it was recently, last year with the Fazeev fight, we thought he was going to be able to break in, and he didn't. I think this is going to be another example of that, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I got Dustin as well. You know, I got to back the old guard.
Yeah, 100%. But talking about, I mean, look, he's not young, but he is a new fighter in the UFC. We got MVP Michael Venom Page against Kevin Holland. So Holland, 25 wins, 10 losses. Recently, he lost to Jack Della Maddalena, who's actually fighting on this card. MVP coming from Bellator, 21 wins, 2 losses. I'll be completely honest, bro. I don't know much about MVP because I don't watch Bellator that much. But what do you think about Kevin Holland against MVP?
Honestly, MVP is like he's obviously a very flashy fighter. He uses his range and reach, which he has, like, for the division that he's in. He's very tall, he's very ranged, he's got super long arms, he's got really flashy kicks, long rangy punches. Yeah. He's got the confidence to back up doing those flying knees and different things. But we've seen him lose by guys that we've seen him lose. He's very beatable, in my opinion. He's very beatable. I do believe that the competition in the UFC is higher than in Bellator. I think MVP was a big fish in a smaller pond, whereas now he's with the big boys. But in saying that, you don't know which Kevin Holland you'll get. Okay?
No.
Kevin Holland would have to be the most inconsistent fighter that comes to mind for me right now. Don't get me wrong, like the dude, love his semantics, love the way he talks. Like, I like the way his mentality. I just like him as a character, but I can't fight like that. And I think it affects his consistency. But then maybe in saying that, maybe he can't fight without being like that. Okay, I think I've heard his coaches say that Kevin Holland just does what he wants. Like we drill him to do this and then he does this.
That's pretty so, funny.
Yeah, I think Holland can beat MVP.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. I can see this fight being just like a bit of a tit for tat sort of fight and one of them win or lose by decision. You know, we don't see too much action.
Yeah. I think the most compelling thing for me about this fight is MVP coming from Bellator and seeing what the standard of fighting genuinely is. Because with Holland, he has been inconsistent, but he's been inconsistent against the likes of Jack Della Maddalena, Wonderboy, and Hamzat, right? That's who he's lost against. And then he's beaten Ponce Nibio and Chiesa. So he's not losing against or winning against chumps. Like, these are some of the top guys in the division.
Yeah.
So I actually think he does win as well. I'm saying that not knowing much about MVP, so I'm not the most informed on it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see MVP. Like, obviously, MVP's going to be bringing a bit of hype because he had a lot of hype in Bellator. Right? Yeah. He's bringing a lot of hype for this fight, especially because of the whole Bellator UFC thing. But I think he's beatable. I think Kevin Holland can win. Yeah. I'm going to back the UFC guy just because. You know,
back in the old guard, UFC back guys, in the UFC right? guy.
Yeah, I'm going old guard again. I got Holland. I think Holland has the skill set. I'd like to see Holland utilize some of his wrestling and grappling. Not his wrestling. His wrestling's not a bit average, but his grappling at the very least. You know, I can see him doing some things here. I don't know. Let's see what Holland turns up.
All right. And speaking of the devil, so we do have Jack Della Maddalena fighting on this card against Gilbert Burns, man. So Burns, 22 wins, 6 losses. He recently lost to Bilal by decision. Jack Della Maddalena, he's on a bit of a tear. Now, he's coming off a split decision win against Holland. He's got 16 wins, 2 losses. How do you feel about this fight, man?
Well, I guess we look at Burns losing to Bilal. I think he had a shoulder injury, didn't he?
From memory.
Yeah, I think he had a torn shoulder or something like that. And
that
fight wasn't a Burns fight that we're used to seeing. The way he fought looked like he was injured.
Yeah.
Because the fight previous to that against Masvidal, he looked great. Like, he looked phenomenal. Let's assume we get the best versions of both guys. I think Jack is really, he's going to have his mettle tested. Yeah. I think this is certainly the fight that decides whether Jack is up to scratch for the guys in the top
100%.
Because I think for Maddalena, I think this would have to be his hardest test on one of his hardest matchups.
For sure.
Like a power puncher that closes the gap quickly, that can also grapple like a devil, right? Yeah, I think, Jack, if we see the Burns that fought Khamzat, or if you see the Burns that fought Masvidal, I think Jack would have better success against the guy against the Burns that fought Masvidal, just because Jack's very good. He's very wily at fighting in that pocket, like keeping that small spaces but landing shots.
Yeah.
By all accounts, like looking at the guys he's fought and the way they react, he's got like thud in his punches. Mm. He's very good at keeping those tight knit. But Burns explodes in really quickly with heavy hands, which usually precedes a takedown of some sort. And on the grounds, Burns would have to be the best MMA grappler at the moment, in my opinion. Like jiu-jitsu guy, he would have to be the best. So, mate, yeah, it's a tough fight for Jack. I'd like to see him get the win just because, like, this puts him in the top five. Australian dude getting in the top five, like, yeah, it's phenomenal, man. And it'll make a statement for the entire division. You know, we'll be seeing a title shot like shortly following that. But this is going to be a hard fight for him, and there's no denying that.
It's literally his hardest fight to date. This, as you said, is his biggest test. Being the Aussie, that's who I'm going to back. I was just looking, though, dude, at Burns' recent fights. The dude fought in January of last year, then April, and then in May. So I think, if anything, he was fighting a little bit too much coming into that fight with Bilal. I can't remember the circumstances as to why he took it. I think he did take it on short notice. But now that he's had a bit of a break, you know, it is a hard fight for Jack, and I'm worried. I'm worried. I want to say Jack, though. I'm going to say Jack.
Yeah. We got to back the Aussie. You know, and like I said, I think him getting a win just opens up his future like you would not believe.
For sure.
Not that he needs it. I think he's certainly young enough, and he's got enough momentum to keep doing what he's doing regardless of the outcome, but certainly fast tracks him into the title conversation. So
100%. Yeah. And then finally, for the last fight on the main card, we've got Piotr Jan against Song Yadong. Jan, 16 wins, 5 losses. Unfortunately, he's on a little bit of a loss streak at the moment. 3 losses, but against no slumps, Merab, Sean O'Malley, and Aljamain Sterling. Song Yadong is doing pretty good at the moment. 21 wins, 7 losses. He recently beat Chris Gutierrez and Ricky Simon. Rob, how do you feel about this fight? I feel this is a make it or break it fight for Piotr Jan.
And it is sad saying it like that, right?
Yeah.
Because Jan's fighting weapons, man. You just listed off the people he lost to, and like they're all in title conversations right now.
And one's a champ.
Like I said, man, when you lose to these high level dudes, it's not like you restart. You don't get to, you know, have those easy fights to build yourself back up again. He's just fighting like weapon after weapon after weapon, champion, contender, champion. He's only in for hard fights now. I think Song Yadong's a good fight for him.
Yeah.
I think Song Yadong is the one that's going to have his mettle tested in this fight. Song Yadong's a weapon of a fighter, but again, like the narrative of the entire card, I'm going old guard again. Because Piotr Jan is so good. He's so good. So I don't know. I feel like his record, and you see 3 losses in a row, and it looks really bad, but no one really looks into who he lost to.
Yeah.
You know, and the fights themselves, I don't know. I'm going to go with the favorite here and go Jan for sure.
Yeah, and like the conversation around Jan, it can't be that he's getting too old. Like the dude's only 31. Like he's still in his prime. He's still young. I think he's just on a – and it's hard to call it a slump. And even though I just did that, because the people that he lost against are literally one previous champ, someone who's the champ right now, and another person who's about to fight for the title. So he's fighting like really hard contenders. I think this is a good fight for him. I wouldn't call it a tune-up fight because I was relatively impressed with how Song did against Chris Gutierrez. I don't like the way that Gutierrez fights, and I'm glad that Song won. But if Jan can just try and reignite the fire that he had, like, do you remember after he beat it, he beat Faber and Aldo and he was coming against Sterling? Everyone was like, dude, this guy is unstoppable. I was so impressed with him. And then he obviously lost in those circumstances. I think he can bounce back. I really do. I like Song Yadong. He looked really strong against Chris Gutierrez, put really nice pressure on him. But I'm going to say Jan. I think Jan can get it done. I think he can kind of bring back that old fire. Yeah. That's literally, it's been old guard and Aussies. That's all of our predictions.
That's it. Non-biased.
Non-biased at all.
Objective predictions.
Look, we're just going to say that's not what you're coming to the MMRK podcast for. You're coming for our heavily biased, my casual opinions on MMA. But yeah, that is UFC 299. Those are our predictions. Let us know what you think in the comments below. Obviously, it's a much bigger card. Like, we have a lot of good fights on the prelims that we're unable to talk about today. But we'll talk about, again, our breakdown probably in 2 weeks from now. But let's move on to the games news. Rob, there hasn't been that much games news this week. I want to kind of preface this. It's been pretty light on. The biggest news recently is that apparently Ghost of Tsushima is getting a PC port next week. There's an insider that suggests that it's coming to PC after being on PlayStation as an exclusive for several years there. I think it's part of the bigger discussion that we are seeing so many more PC ports, even of PlayStation exclusives. We're seeing what Xbox is wanting to do, bringing their games to more platforms, to PC, to even Nintendo and also PlayStation as well. How do you feel about more games getting these kinds of PC ports and not being as exclusive as long?
Oh, yeah, I think it's tricky because obviously that's really hard because I don't like the idea of exclusivity.
Yeah.
Like, generally, because I don't like it. I feel like games should be available and accessible to everyone. I don't like how some consoles have access to one game and there's no way to play that game without getting that console. I don't really like that, but I also do understand the competition of trying to get someone to buy my console instead of your one, right? Mm. So it's tricky, but you know, on that, I want to just quickly bring up, I had rumors that Xbox are going to leave the console field. Is there any weight to that?
There were. So the context behind that was that there were a few leaks that suggested that Xbox is going to move Starfield and it's not going to be exclusive. They're going to release it on PlayStation and a bunch of other big games as well, potentially Indiana Jones when it eventually releases. And then based on that, there was a lot of speculation that Xbox was going to move out of the console business. They shut down some teams internally at Xbox. They obviously did a bunch of layoffs as well. And it just fueled the fire. And then Xbox came out and said, look, just for now, we are releasing Sea of Thieves and Pentiment and a couple of other games onto other platforms, but they're firmly staying in the Xbox business. They're already planning their next console. There's been, not leaks, like it's come out as part of the FTC trial that they're already planning their next console. So, no, it was just a bunch of rumors that Xbox tried to shut down as quickly as possible.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't want them to get out of the console business. Like this is the thing, Rob. Like for so long, we all know this, exclusivity has fueled, it's been a big part of the business of video games. To sell your console in competition to other people's consoles and other companies' consoles, the biggest way to do it was releasing exclusives. If you can't get this amazing game or set of games anywhere else, you're more likely to purchase the console. And that's been a big reason why a lot of people haven't necessarily bought an Xbox recently, because you can play all of their games on PC. So there's less of a reason to do so. And some people are arguing now, well, now that Sea of Thieves is coming to PlayStation and blah, 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 there's even less of a reason to do so. It's absolutely, I agree that it would be nice if games just released anywhere. It's just not currently the business that we're in. It might differ in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. Mm. And it sucks. I was just talking to my brother recently and he was like, I want to play Helldivers 2. How much is a PS5? And I'm like, oh, it's about $750. And he's like, well, I can't justify spending that amount of money. It sucks for people in that position. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and especially since I think the most attractive feature for a console was accessibility. It was like pricing and game optimization. Yeah. And I feel like with the bigger console, the consoles today, they're straying from that. You know, they're becoming super expensive. Games are getting released unoptimized. And I don't know, I think we're forgetting, you know, this generation weren't around when they first came out. The whole reason why you'd buy a PS1 instead of a PC is because a PC costs $1 billion.
Yeah.
And a PlayStation costs $100, $200.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, like, I personally, I appreciate that more of these games are coming to PC at the very least. I don't see PlayStation ever releasing their stuff on Xbox, like Xbox is thinking about doing and is in fact doing. If I was to give you a 15, 20 year prediction, I think one day, no matter where there is a screen, if PlayStation can release a game there, if Nintendo can release, maybe not Nintendo, but if Xbox can release a game there or whatever publisher, they'll do it. Everything is going to become, you know, just available everywhere because it's becoming too expensive. Margins are too thin to develop games the way that they're doing now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Xbox are blurring the lines a bit too much between PC and console.
Yeah.
But it's tricky though because cross compatibility is huge. But I don't know. This is above my pay grade, mate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and the next, we can skip past this, but this was like literally the biggest games news coming out over the past couple of days. So there was a Nintendo Switch emulator. It's called Yuzu. Nintendo was suing them for like several million dollars because they were saying that when Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom was actually hacked and it was leaked, it was partly because of this emulator. And it's been a big discussion recently because a lot of people obviously are for emulators. They're not illegal per se. So long as they're not being used to, you know, distribute actual illegal ROMs, then it's fine. So a lot of people thought that this emulator actually had a good chance against Nintendo in court. The problem was, I've looked a little bit into it, Rob. So what they did is they set up a Patreon, and then apparently behind this Patreon, they had certain builds that were accessible only to patrons. And through that, they could actually get support for the hacked version of Tears of the Kingdom. That's the research that I found that apparently led to this. And people were like, yeah, you probably took it a step too far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I think the biggest no-no was poking the bear, dude.
You don't poke Nintendo out of anyone.
Nah, dude. Nobody mess with Nintendo, man. Like, there's a reason why they've been a staple since day one. They are like, and they've never played with anybody else.
No.
They are a standalone island of solidarity that can't be touched. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't
poke the bear. And it's hard because, like, you want emulation and you want preservation to continue to be a thing. And to be able to do that, people oftentimes need the money to support their endeavors in that regard. But it's just hard when a developer decides to take this kind of step where they lock everything behind a Patreon or a few things behind a Patreon, because beforehand, everyone was able to enjoy that emulator and now they're having to cease distribution, right? So people are going to have to look towards another emulator if they're going to want to play their ROMs. I definitely would like to see emulation continue because of the benefits of preservation. Like, some games, bro, you can't even play nowadays because they're just wiped off the face of the earth. Like, servers have been shut down. That one game that you used to play when you were a kid, you probably can't play it anymore unless you can do so with a ROM. There is absolutely a benefit for it, but there is such a blurry line and you don't want to piss someone off like Nintendo. You know what I mean? So yeah, that is all the games news that we have for this week. Pretty light on week, unfortunately, but let's get to our next section, what we're watching, playing, and reading. Rob, what have you been getting up to since you're back?
I'll let you start.
Okay.
You can start because I have also been playing Elden Ring.
We've both been playing Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. If you remember,
you start.
Yeah, last week I said I was going to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I had full intentions to, and then I got stuck back into my Elden Ring playthrough. I ended up stopping that at the 30-hour point previously, and now I've just picked it back up. Dude, the game is so good, man. It is so good. One of the best games. Genuinely, I would say one of the best games that have probably ever come out in the past decade, let alone this console generation. And the challenge that you get, even just from boss battles, I'll admit, I followed a guide. I followed a build guide, this awesome build, which is freaking, it slays so many enemies. But even in that situation, coming up against bosses, you still can't just walk up and expect that you're going to kill them and that's it, right? Elden Ring and obviously Souls games beyond that, or before that, they teach you like through different moves, through different skill sets, through different bosses. They're all, every enemy, every boss has its own moves, their own timing. They're all freaking different. And you've just got to learn and learn and learn. And like, for instance, the biggest thing that I always learn with Elden Ring, oftentimes because of instinct, I want to dodge roll and roll back because that's what I want to do. I want to keep getting distance from the boss or whatever it is. But the biggest thing that the game teaches you is like, actually, sometimes it's best to roll into an enemy and get the jump on them like up close and stop being scared and running away. I freaking love the boss battles in Elden Ring. I recently killed Melania. I've killed all the freaking demigods. Sick. And this the level design is brilliant. Just the sense of exploration is brilliant. I want to do a New Game Plus playthrough. I'm genuinely this close to pulling the trigger, but I think I want to wait until Shadow of the Erdtree. What do you reckon?
Okay. I think I agree with you that Elden Ring is one of the best games released in the last decade, especially if you like Souls-like games. It is so good. I will say that I think Elden Ring is the most accessible game. I think it's the most user-friendly of their cast, of their lineup, of FromSoft's cast, like Dark Souls and whatnot. I also believe it's the easiest of their games.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't think the bosses are not hard. They're not hard.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're hard. Like I think the game is as hard as you make it for yourself. So if you optimize your build in any which way,
yeah,
you're not gonna have a problem. So
I agree
secret.
Though, dude.
I'm gonna let out your little secret. I'm gonna let out your secret because you own a bleed build. Bleed destroys the game. Like it is.
Well,
so
it does,
strong,
but
silly.
Yeah, but some bosses are immune to build to bleed.
Who
so
the,
Melania, who? Melania, for instance, has a high bleed resistance.
No, but she still bleeds.
I'm gonna search that right now. Melania,
I'm pretty sure she still bleeds.
Bleed. I think she does. But let's see.
If they bleed, they lose, like, straight up. Like, there's no real debating that.
Oh, no, sorry. So there's this Reddit thread that's like, Elden Ring Millennia becoming immune to bleed or something like that. So, I don't know, maybe she's not.
I don't know. If they bleed, they die, like... Hands down.
Well, it was funny though. So, because when I beat Melania with my build, it took me like, I think 9-10 times. I looked on Reddit because I was curious how long it took other people to kill Melania. Dude, I saw people racking up crazy attempts, like 100, 200, 300, 400 times to be able to kill her. But you're right. It is all about build optimization. If I didn't have that guy that I was following to optimize my build, I would have got my ass handed to me 200 times. Because when my build wasn't optimized, I was getting my ass handed to me by lesser bosses. That is really what it is. You know, but, it's learning their moveset and having a good build.
Yeah, I'm not putting shit on that either, though, because that's the game. That's the whole game. It's about progression and that power fantasy, right? Like that's the entire game. Like you try and level up and get stronger so you can smash these bosses. The way I play it nowadays is like I level one run around the entire map, just unlocking things.
Yeah.
So that when I get to the boss, I'm level 150.
Yeah.
And I can just see how strong I've gotten, right?
Yeah.
I did a run where I was just like pure sword and board and I only leveled up on the way to things. So I didn't do any grinding or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
That was hard. That was so hard because who do you reckon was the hardest boss in the game?
I tell you what, it wasn't even like a proper boss. It was one of those field area bosses or whatever. But my build wasn't the best at the time. Do you remember the freaking... the Shatterstar like ball thing? It was like on the top of a mountain. It's resistant to build. Yep. Ridiculous. Yep. I couldn't touch the thing.
Yep.
That for sure, in the moment at least, was the hardest.
On your
boss
way to
that
fire castle.
That's the one. Yeah. Dude, I couldn't kill that because on a horse, your build isn't as good because you can't use jump attacks or your proper attacks. So the thing just freaking comes and you got no opportunity to kill it.
Yeah.
That fight
I'll let you know. Like I've put stupid amounts of hours into this game.
Yeah.
Like stupid because I got pretty big. So do you play PvP?
Nah, screw that. Screw that.
Oh, man.
No way.
I got really into it. And so I mentioned that I've been playing it lately. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And dude, like it sucks because like there'll be days that I'm untouchable. I'm a god amongst men, right? And then there'll be days like yesterday where I like maybe I didn't have enough coffee or something, but I was getting wrecked every single match. Dude's just like teabagging me every game. Every game, dude. Made me hate the game. I rage quit, turn it off.
Fair enough.
Like, PvP's away. You got to go. You got to go Gladiator, the arena. You got some time after this. We'll punch on.
No, dude. I here's the thing. I don't want to play it as PvP. That's not the way that I want to play the game. I want to play the game.
No,
no, I know.
You don't get the tickle in your balls when you got like a million souls, and then it says Invader, so and so 357.
I mean, like, that's scary. That's scary, isn't it?
And then you see the red dude like a kilometer away, you're like, oh no.
Wait, so dude. When you play, you always leave yourself online and open to invasions.
Oh, yeah, dude. Because like no matter what I'm doing, just because like it's exhilarating when someone invades you.
That's fine.
I don't know. But we already know this. I'm a sucker for punishment, man.
You are. We know your game tastes and your interests. You for sure are.
You know who I think was the hardest boss in Elden Ring was Moog.
Yeah, Moog.
I don't know if he's the hardest boss. Yeah. Like Moog, the blood one in the Blood Dynasty.
You know why though? Like, because he has that freaking one attack where he gets the seal around you, right? Yeah. And then he procs it three times. And all you can do in that situation, from what I knew, is just constantly heal. He'll hit you and you have to heal. He'll hit you again, you have to heal. And hit you a third time, then you'll have to heal. It sucked.
Well, there is that item you can get which stops that.
They say, I didn't know that was an item.
Yeah, you got to go smash his brother in the sewers or something like that. But what I just found it so hard. I was still low level, so I was trying to run around and everything.
And
I was trying to rush a bleed build to get his spear to unlock his remembrance item.
Right.
So he was the first boss I fought.
Okay, well maybe that's why it was hard for you.
And it was so hard. It was silly hard. I don't know. It was.
Do you remember what level you were when you fought it?
It would have been 60 something.
Oh, dude, that is so under. Of course, it was hard. No, I fought that thing when I was well over 100 for sure.
I don't know.
Wait, yours, finally, because Mogwin Palace literally has, like, if you want a rune farm, it has the best rune farm or one of the best ones in the game. Mm-hmm. So you could have leveled up a little bit, but I understand if you wanted to do that.
I've got like seven characters, dude. Like,
what would you say is your most fun build, out of curiosity?
Mate, honestly, I don't know anymore because yesterday all my builds got absolutely ragdolled and teabagged. So I'm of a mind that I hate the game and I don't want to play anymore.
You'll pick it up. When Shadow of the Erdtree comes out, you'll play it.
The two builds I'm running at the moment is I have a pure strength build.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I get like when it's going good, I melt things.
Yeah.
Like I'm melting these guys. But when it's bad, I just feel so one-dimensional. They just space me so well, and they have like clever and creative ways to use weapon arts or spells in combination to true combo into different things. It's, I don't know. It's, and then I feel like so simple, you know. So I jump onto my faith build, which is just he uses spells and faith. But then I do that, and like I'm using the coated sword. Have you know that weapon?
Mm-hmm.
The coated sword. It's like that sword that looks like a lightsaber. It's got no range on it, right? But it scales super well with faith. And I'm trying to mix my spells in there to combo them well, to keep people off guard. But my spacing is terrible. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. I'm kind of between builds. I'm a little upset.
But this has always been a thing. I remember I saw this post the other day talking about how many of you were like the god amongst men when it came to playing games like Mario Kart with your friends or in your neighborhood or even like at school. And then the moment you start playing Mario Kart online, a bunch of Japanese players are going to kick your freaking ass. Like that's always the way that it's been. Always.
Yeah. That brings me to what I'm thinking about playing.
Yeah.
Okay. Tekken 8.
Oh, don't do it to yourself, Rob. No,
I think I've started watching like competitive scene on that, and the learning curve just looks so steep, dude. I don't know if I can do it because, like,
don't do it.
But it looks so competitive that I want to do it because I don't know. It looks cool. I really like the idea of it. It's so well done. Like the guys that are really high ranked in that game are so skilled at the game.
Yeah,
like they block at the right times, or they move and they combo at the right times, and they risk it all with a big man. It just looks good. Do you think?
Well, I agree. It looks really good. But as I said to you, when I used to play fighting games, I used to be good amongst my family. Not online. I'm terrible at fighting games. I could never do that to myself. I mean, we saw what happened with us when we played Street Fighter, right? And that was with a character whose moveset hasn't changed for freaking 20 years. I was doing good initially, and then you just learned, and then you smashed me. These people are playing it every day. The people that are currently playing it online now. How do you think we're going to go against them? We're going to get our asses handed to us.
I don't know, but what if I practice? I don't know.
Then you'd do better, but it'll still be hard.
And there's a lot of competition tiers. I don't know. I feel like we could do it. Let us know in the comments below if you want to see me and Jommy climb the ranks in Tekken 8. Like, I think we can make like a little video journey of our rise up the Tekken
chain. Do they have like a rank system kind of like Overwatch where you're in different tiers? And okay, that's cool.
Yeah. I think so. They have like a brawler and it goes up the more you win.
That's sick.
They have it in Elden Ring too. It's like the gold shiny banner is the best one. It's like a 90-95% win rate. I have one of those.
Oh, well, sorry. out of how many wins do you have to have that percentage?
I think it's like a 90% win rate, 95% win rate.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, that is what we've been watching, playing, reading. Next up, we've got viewer questions. As I mentioned at the beginning, if you have any viewer questions, let us know in the comments. We also have a few members that we've prioritized to get some questions in there. We're going to start off with a member, end with a member as well. So first up, member Dane and Edie says, the boys are back. Congrats to Rob on the amazing fight. And you, Johnny, with your success on the channels. I suggested this on the video before it went down. For those of you that don't know, I had to delete the previous video once. But would you ever do an MMArcade event, like a charity event where you do MMArcade so you get some fighters and they do three rounds, round one MMA, round two arcade. So they choose to do a round on something like Tekken, Mortal Kombat or Smash, and then round three back to MMA or vice versa with two games and one MMA. I think that would be awesome. Would love to hear your thoughts. What do you reckon, Rob, about doing some sort of charity event?
Yeah, but how does it work? Is he talking about like an MMA game or is like MMA round of fighting?
Maybe he's talking about like the UFC game.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if it was like a real MMA round, dude, like it doesn't matter what you pick. You're dead, dude.
Yeah, I'm dead. Yeah, Dana would never sign off on that. Dana would never let you fight someone.
No, the police won't sign off on it. You know?
Did you recently watch Sean Strickland that streamer? That's what would happen in light sparring.
That's so silly. You know? I don't like any of those things. I think
that's fair.
I think they're blurring the line between fighting. I think they're taking the honor away from it. Fighting isn't meant to be for fun, right? It's not it's not a game.
Yeah. But in terms of the charity event, I think having a round of different games, because how many UFC fighters are gamers? Even if it's just us two, swapping between those kinds of games I think would be cool. Like a Tekken could be one. It could be a racing game for another. It could be a shooting game for another. Completely mix it up.
Yeah, I am all for the idea of an MMArcade event for charity or for, I don't know which sort of charity we do. I think we just maybe do a cash prize for someone or maybe a sponsorship on someone and make money for a sponsorship for someone to do something. You know, those charities, I feel like most of the money gets put into the organization for wages instead of where it needs to be put. But
you don't know where the money's going.
No, that's not this podcast.
Yeah. Look, we've got a lot of things planned for the podcast. Some stuff that we won't talk about publicly, but our goal for a while has just been let's build our base subscriber base as much as possible. So when we get to that stage, when we're doing other stuff that aren't main episodes of the podcast, they are getting a decent amount of views and traffic. You know what I mean? Because right now, everything else around the podcast episodes is still slowly building.
Yep. Exactly what you said.
But next up, we've got Nibi, who said, Rob, did you see the fight day weights from UFC 298? Costa was like 8 pounds bigger. Did he feel like a bigger man in there? And who do you think is the biggest dude you've had to fight? Congratulations on the win, you animal. Rob?
No. Can you look him up? And what do you mean 8 pounds bigger? Like 8 pounds bigger than me?
No, he was more than 8 pounds bigger. I saw the exact, I want to find
it. Then what?
So they did the weights of people, including yourself, by the way, on the actual weight day. And did you get weighed like just before? Obviously. Did you get weighed just before you went into the ring? How did that work?
No, not just before you go in the ring. You go in, when you get to the arena, you check in and they check your weight.
Okay, so that's what they're referring to. So they're comparing your actual weigh-in weight to that weight. Yep. So for instance, Paulo Costa weighed 30 pounds more. His weigh-in weight is 185.5, and he weighed in on that time, and the second time at 215.
And what was I?
So you were 185.5, and you went to 206.7. Sorry, 207.6.
That's not that much different.
No, it's not. Between you two, it's not. I think the big discussion was how much people go up in weight after the official weigh-ins.
Oh, yeah. It's massive. Like usually, it's usually about 10 kilos or so. Generally speaking. But then I also know of guys that like to stay lighter.
Yeah.
You know, and then I know guys that like to get big, big. Mm. So that weight that I came in, that's usually where I want to be. Not too big, not too little. Just
Dude, aside from Ian Garry, like the top four fights on that card, every fighter went up in weight at least 12%. So everyone is in that camp. That's just the kind of the way that it went.
It's just that's how the sport goes.
Yeah. Next question that we have is from Sharpshooter 1400. So this is to you, Rob, in your fight recently. The signature 1-2 head kick combo was only thrown once. Was that a strategy or just how the fight played out?
It's kind of how the fight played out. In hindsight, I should have thrown it more. I didn't.
Yeah.
Probably should have. It was, it is what it is.
No, like, don't do anything different because you don't know what something in the universe, when you do one thing, it changes another. You did exactly what you needed to do to win.
I don't know. Like on reflection of the fight, and it's something me and my coaches have spoken about as well, like I probably should have thrown it more, especially from the first round onwards, it's late in the first or something like that. But I don't know, you know, I was feeling things in there, having a lot of success with that calf kick.
Yeah.
And I was really just emphasizing that and my hands.
So I want to say, I mentioned this, I didn't think the commentators were doing you justice. You were throwing that calf kick and destroying his leg. But then every time Costa threw his own low kick, they were losing their minds, especially Joe Rogan. It was like, oh, low kick from Costa. And every time you threw it, it's like you didn't throw a kick. I was getting so annoyed. I was screaming at the screen.
I got done dirty by the commentary. I did. You know, it's, I don't know. It is what it is. Come on, Joe. Love me. Please. Love me, Joe.
Next question that we have is from Heisen, who says, question, how much does hunger / win to a will to win override having a good or bad chin? Chins typically don't improve, but would Rob 6 months ago have been able to take that head kick and keep going? Or does the hunger to let you keep going when you could technically just shell up and go down? What do you reckon, Rob?
Yeah, man, I think this is something that I've really focused on or just like been made aware of in the last fight. Between the last two fights. Yeah. I don't know. Like seriously, last fight, I felt like my mind and headspace was just ironclad. I felt like my resolve was unbreakable. And I felt like I had perfect control of my determination and hunger. So I really felt... like I felt impervious to that sort of stuff. I didn't feel like nothing was going to get me out of there. There was nothing he was going to throw that was going to stop me from fighting and taking that W. So, mate, I think it actually has a lot more to do with things than it's believed to. You know, I don't think people put enough weight into determination and resolve because – everyone knows your mind controls everything. But I don't think it's not one of those things you can just like throw a statistic out. It's not something you can measure in numbers, really. So I think people find it very hard to really grasp how powerful that is.
Yeah,
you know. So I think it's certainly what. Yeah, that made me stronger, made me tougher.
Yeah, no, it's fair. And final question comes from another member, Dunham, who says, question, you are brought in front of an omnipotent being who will give you an answer.
So much.
I know, who give you an answer to whatever you ask them. Be it, why do cats always fall on their feet, or why does Coca-Cola taste different everywhere you go? What is your question?
Man, that is so loaded.
It's such a hard question, man.
Oof. What about yours?
You know what? Actually, I do have my question. I would love for us to know how the universe was actually created, because it's like something that we are constantly, because I'm a big space dude. That's all I watch on YouTube sometimes. It's the one thing that we kind of have a good idea, but we still don't know what happened in those few like little microseconds or whatever when the universe was created, or indeed what happened before that. I would love that question to just go to like the mysteries of space, because I just think it's so interesting. And is it going to further mankind? I don't know. It could unlock further things in science, but that would be for me, just so we all know how the universe was created, how we got to where we are right now.
And you know what? I like that question. You know, I'll jump on it too, because I think it answers a lot more than just that.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know. My question would have to be religious in nature, but then I feel like questioning religion is a lack of faith in the first place.
Mm.
You know, and I am a faithful man.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm a little torn up. I don't know which approach I'd take on that question.
Okay, here's a question back to you, Rob, on that. If you had the opportunity to refuse asking a question because you know, you didn't want to take that responsibility or whatever, would you do that instead?
Well, I wouldn't not ask something, because I feel like I could just avoid the important questions.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, there are easy ones, saying like, oh, what are the winning lotto numbers or whatever it might be. Like, tell me a stock that's going to go up this amount so I can become stinking rich. Those are obvious. Straight up
would just do it for greed. Yeah, I changed my mind. I would straight up just take the selfish approach and ask for the next winning lottery numbers.
Yeah, how does that work though? Because like in Australia, we don't get to choose lotto numbers. Like we just go and be like, you give me that game and they print you off random numbers, right?
Nah, dude, you can pick your numbers. What are you talking about?
Because I don't buy lottery tickets. I have no idea. I've never done it.
Okay. Dude, you gotta leave your room, dude.
Dude, I don't think I'm ever going to win. What's the point of wasting money on lotto tickets?
Well, you'll never win with that attitude.
Nah. I've only ever bought, genuinely, I'm not bullshitting here, one set of lottery, like it was a 30 numbers or whatever it might be, or 30 sets of numbers, but it was all random. That's the only time that I did it. So that would be your answer then, or your question.
Yeah, I'd make it something selfish. Like I've decided I'm not gonna further humanity. I'm gonna leave that to the next dude. I'm gonna take the W and I don't know, win a winning stock or something like that.
Yeah, be the guy that bet on Apple 30 years ago.
What would be the question you would ask to make the most money?
Look.
Lottery's money, but it's not a lot of money.
Well, it is when it gets to the, like, recently in Australia, bro, we had that one that was like 100-150 million or something like that.
100 million is not that much money.
It's a lot.
When you're playing with an omnipotent being of mass knowledge,
yeah,
100 million is like a speck in the ocean. There are sheiks and princes and billionaires that would laugh at your $100 million, dude.
Yeah.
They day trade that. You know what I mean?
Would it be like finding the biggest untapped oil reserve or something like that?
It'd have to be something like, where is the largest gold deposit in Australia?
Yeah. But then you have to have the resources to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, it's much easier to try and go to like an excavating company and tell them of your findings and then like hire them as day laborers, sell your house or whatever.
I think that's risky.
It would be to try and get started in the stock.
Yeah. Do you know what I would say? I would say this, and it depends how much money you have in savings, but you say, give me like the stock that's going to go up the most, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years, and you literally put all your freaking savings into it. And you know by the end of it, you're getting this amount of money.
But then you got no money for 10, 15 years.
But it's working to make you money.
Yeah, but I don't want to live 15 years without money.
That's true. Why I said Lotto. Lotto was my first answer.
Do you understand? Like, you don't get those years back.
Lotto was my first answer. Just let's be clear here. Like
that's why I don't believe in like the people that say sacrifice now so you can live. Like I don't like that. You got to enjoy every day because you're not getting today back. You're not going to get yesterday back. You need to be happy. You know, that's like chase your dreams sort of thing. But I don't know. Our podcast is changing again. Let's leave.
That was episode 33 of the MMRK podcast. To those of you that have watched them to the end, thank you so much. If you're also listening as well, we appreciate your support. That was a good episode, Rob.
It was, dude. Thank you very much, everybody. Tell your friends.